You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParadiseInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
And welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for September 15th, 2015. And this is episode number 232. And it's only my second episode here on the CJ Mars Radio Network and my own one-hour standalone show. And of course, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, this week's news includes a secret UFO invasion involving Homeland Security, a viral video of a possible Thunderbird, what you're doing wrong as a ghost investigator, and we'll talk conferences and conventions. And also, this week I have a major announcement, which, of course, will be revealed later in the show. What fun would it be if I just told you right now, right? Stay tuned. This is going to be a very unique opportunity. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And I can speak for IMHS as I graduated with my bachelor's, master's, and ultimately PhD, which was a lot of work to go through all that, but it was well worth it. And I can't imagine not what I would be without it, actually, even though I've only had it for 2 years. It's really helped me out in a lot of different areas of my life, not just paranormal things and metaphysics things. So check it out, metaphysicsinstitute.org. And they're not really paying the bills, but I just feel like these are – there's a few different sponsors that I'll talk about as the show goes through. And these are just places and things that I think that I really owe it back to them for what they've done for me. And IMHS is definitely one of those things. Now to some news. And first I want to talk website news. ParanewsInsider.com is the major website for this show. It's not where the show is broadcast. Obviously, that's through CJMarsRadio.com. But the ParanewsInsider.com is the homepage, more or less, for the show and where specific news and information about my show will be broadcast. And when I first started this show back in 2008, I designed a website around a running blog so that when I was investigating or researching a story, you could follow along with my research and to provide links and other information in a blog-style format. But back then, the show was a monthly show, and even then, I didn't really have a whole lot of time to keep everything updated. It was a lot of work, and when we decided to go to a weekly format, which scared me to death, although I'm so used to it now after a few years, but I realized that I couldn't keep up a blog-style website, so I stripped away everything, and back then, I had a separate site for cryptid, UFO, ghost, strange earth mysteries, and other items, as well as the events and different things that I was doing. And then I just incorporated the blog into a running blog that I have that's posted on the ParanewsInsider.com website that is a Blogspot blog. So when I stripped everything away, the website pretty much stayed the same up until I decided to add a few things to it. And the latest additions – this may sound silly, but I actually added a contact information to the About page. So now you can directly contact me through an email form instead of just insider@ParanewsInsider.com, which is still a good way to get a hold of me. And probably the biggest thing I've done, which I wanted to avoid for a number of years, but now it kind of makes sense, or maybe I was just unwilling to change, is that I added a news tab. And on this news tab, I've linked The Anomalist, which is probably one of the best, if not the best, news source out there for paranormal news. And they primarily cover paranormal news, and paranormal meaning in this definition, cryptids, UFOs, ghosts, and a little bit of strange, high strangest type stories, anomalous stories, but not just any odd news story that seems to pop up in several other news feeds. And the other one I added was Unexplained Mysteries. Unexplained Mysteries is kind of a user-based, visitor-based submission type news website where people who are frequent users of that submit stories for that website. And some of those are not necessarily paranormal. They're kind of just strange stories, like I mentioned before, just high strangeness, just weird stories that are just a little odd. Don't necessarily have anything to do with the paranormal, but it is still, in my opinion, one of the leading websites out there. And I wanted to provide more than just copying The Anomalist. I wanted to give at least two sources, and I may add more as time goes on, but I wanted to add those two. So the ParanewsInsider.com website can be your one-stop shop for finding out what's going on in the news as well as the events, which at the top I have an events tab that lists conferences and conventions for ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, and a lot of these are inclusive of all of those things anyway. Most events will have primarily ghost, but then we'll have a few cryptid people and maybe one or two UFO people. And then there's the other types of events that are almost all cryptid, and I have still a few ghost people sprinkled in. Majority of the US UFO conferences are typically MUFON-based, Mutual UFO Network, who does their own major events. And you're going to hear the word MUFON quite a bit. They're usually involved in quite a few stories, and one of those tonight that we're going to talk about. And I guess we'll just jump into the news. Why not? This is the Paranormal News Insider. So we'll start off with cryptid news, as I usually do. And this one is, as I mentioned before, about a thunderbird, also known as a pterosaur. Now, this was a video that surfaced last week that was being called a real pterosaur spotted over Idaho, USA. That's what the video said. And it was also sprinkled all through social media. A few others had splattered this all over the place and had also claimed that it took place in Ohio, which it did not. If it did, I'd be really, really mad because I missed it living here in Ohio. But as exciting as this video was to watch, it was really interesting. If you haven't seen it, I do have the video linked at the Paranews Insider Facebook page at facebook.com/Paranews Insider. You're also going to want to keep an eye on that if you're going to follow the show, because all the stories I talk about in depth, I will provide the initial links to these stories. And sometimes I'll even send out links to these stories that aren't really hitting the mainstream. They're not on social media. These are ones that I might have had to do a little research or digging up to find some information. So you'll know a little bit more about these stories than everybody else will. But the stories that I post on the Facebook page are ones that I will be talking about during the show. And it's important to note, I guess at this point, that I don't talk about every paranormal story. I don't talk about everything that hits social media, and I don't talk about every odd or strange story out there. I'm very selective in these stories. I only look at ones that have a really good chance of being validated as something that's going to provide some validation or, dare I say, proof, more or less, I guess I should say evidence, of something paranormal, whether it's ghosts, UFOs, particular cryptid, or anything else. And also looking at these stories as high impact stories, stories that are very, very viral, stories that people are talking about a lot on social media or have even made the news, because that makes those stories important too. And important in regards to getting to the bottom of what's really going on with these stories. And I'll probably say this every week for the next few weeks, just trying to explain to you why I don't cover every single story People constantly email me, well, why didn't you talk about this or why didn't you talk about that? And I'll be honest, it took me probably 2 years to start talking about some of these strange Mars formations. And even then, I kind of made fun of a few people about it and got some really bad emails. I guess it served me right. But really, to me, it wasn't paranormal. It wasn't anything to do with UFOs. It was just people really grasping at straws when they saw things in photographs and pictures. But when those things do hit large media, which those stories have, then it's time for me to discuss those things. And now that I've completely gone away from the news story, we'll jump back to the cryptid news story. The video, which was showed a pterosaur, which is a obviously a dinosaur era type flying creature, pteranodon or whatever you want to call it. It appeared, or pterodactyl, I guess that's the word I'm looking for. It appeared to fly near a housing development. The guy standing out looks like his driveway. And you see this thing flapping its wings. It looks dark, very almost blackish because of the background, probably facing more towards the light. And it's flapping its wings. And at one point, it appears that it looks towards the ground, which is one of the biggest points of people trying to rip this video apart or try to figure out what's going on. Is this valid or not? Is when this thing appears to look toward the ground. So instead of debating on YouTube with whether or not this is CGI or this is remote controlled aircraft or what this thing is, the way I approached this story was researching where the video came from. And this is typically 101 for me. This is where I usually start disseminating information about any video or photograph. What's the source? Where did this thing come from? And a lot of times things are sent directly to some sort of paranormal news outlet and they take the story and they kind of run with it. And a lot of times when somebody goes directly to a paranormal site or blog or news station, those stories, you really can't trust them too much. I've had a few stories sent to me and they've never made the air because I've done the research and work behind them and discovered that they were not legitimate. So I don't just want to jump in and have a claim to fame by I broke a story first kind of thing, which is what a lot of people seem to want to do. I do the research, and researching this YouTube video to the original source, I found it to be a YouTube channel user 07TV. While the video itself looks realistic, again, like I mentioned, it dipped its head. To me, it looked strange. At first, it's really exciting. You see this movement, and you would think, well, gosh, there's no way that that's like a remote control or some sort of drone. There are some of these things on the market that look like a pterodactyl or a pteranodon that kind of have the features, but you can kind of tell they're bright red or green or blue, and they're obviously not a living creature. But this thing had the coloration once it moved that it looked real, and it had the head movement looked real. But the more I watched it, it looked stiff. It didn't look natural, and to me, it looked strange. But to me, when it made this dip, it looked like the wind had affected it. So, well, with any of these, I'm very skeptical anyway. I mean, what are the odds that a creature this old would be able to survive, even in Idaho, which, yes, back in those prehistoric days or 65 million years ago in the age of dinosaurs, did have dinosaurs. Now, if it flew over Ohio didn't have dinosaurs. Not that that would matter much because these creatures could travel anyway. But how has a large creature like that gone undetected? So the questions start to mount up, and despite people's hopeful intentions of celebrating prematurely the find of the century, a living pteranodon flying around the United States, doing this research of this 07TV YouTube user, I found that he's also responsible for a number of other releases of videos that are admitted CGI hoaxes, such as the video from 2013 that's titled, quote, "Real UFO with Aliens Caught on Camera," unquote. And I mentioned the name so you can look these up and check them out as well. This one was a really cool one that was an obvious fake from the get-go. And this one was where a skinny alien seems to wave or direct a UFO that's sitting next to it while it stands on a hill by the UFO. And the UFO is pretty big, and it's as if this person just standing out in the open filming this, which is rather gutsy, and most people I think would run or freak out. But made this video even more unbelievable was that it darted into the sky, and it had that little flash, little white flash. That's pretty much a telltale giveaway that it's digital manipulation. And then the person dropped the camera and started to run away, which is obviously what we would expect in a video, and that's trying to gather believability. But it's almost timed where people film the sky or they film something, then they pretend to run, and then they go back and they add all these digital things later on. And later in the video, the UFO is seen hovering again, only to shoot off after being stationary for a moment. So this person probably wasn't sure which one they wanted to do, and they just threw it all into one video. Another video that this person, this 07TV person, is responsible for is, quote, car disappears on the highway, unquote. Another one is, quote, dragon flying over England, unquote, which had a few expletives mentioned in those. And these are examples of some viral hits from this user that have generated millions and millions of views. So I'm surprised that nobody really saw this, and this wasn't called out earlier, that this person is a known hoaxer, has perpetuated known hoaxed videos in the past. People have been arguing back and forth, though. People still believe this. People are still convinced that this is a legitimate video. Others are just assuming it's just complete CGI, and some people are still thinking that this could be some sort of remote control aircraft. Well, if you have to ask me, I would say my opinion is that this is nothing more than a hoax. It's nothing more than CGI. And whether or not it's real or not doesn't really mean anything, because how can we come to a conclusion on the video when we don't have a witness? We don't have anybody to talk to. Where is this person at? You think this person would step forward and say, I'm the one that shot the video. This is what I saw. There's no mention of this. Are there any other witnesses? Obviously, a creature this large in a housing complex, somebody else would have had to have seen such a large object flying to the sky. And in the area, obviously, this creature is probably not going to travel too far. And even if it does migrate or go wherever, eventually somebody would see it. And you wouldn't have a lone creature like this just creeping around the skies of Idaho. There have to be other ones. Now, there's also other things in the video that I didn't even bother to really look at, which would be the environment of the video, the trees, the landscape, where it was potentially shot at. But that information wasn't given out either, so we don't know exactly where this happened. Idaho, USA is a very vague thing, and if I lived in Idaho, why would I bother using the word USA? I think Idaho pretty much speaks for itself. I don't know if there's an Idaho in Europe or anything. I don't think so. So that's another strange thing that when you're looking at this video, I'm not sure if it's really legitimate or not. And I would really highly doubt that it has any legitimacy to it based on the things that we've seen. And that pretty much does it for the crypto news. Again, if you want to see that video that I mentioned, you can see that at the Paranews Insider Facebook page at facebook.com/Paranews Insider. Now in UFO news, an interesting story that's kind of developing now, even though it's an older sighting. This one, I'm surprised, has not gotten as much as attention as it should. To me, this is probably one of the largest UFO stories in many years. This one, you could compare this one to the Stevensville, Texas UFO sighting over the Crawfordsville Ranch area, the Chicago O'Hare Airport UFO that happened. And this may even rival the Phoenix Lights. Yes, the Phoenix Lights, 1997. It happened again a few years later. That's been an ongoing political thing. But this video here also delves into politics a little bit. And this was a video, not just a photograph, which is great. But again, you know, is this CGI? Well, maybe, but maybe not, based on the resource, the place where this came from. makes us question whether or not this could be faked or not. And I'll get into the story, I guess. Instead of beating around the bush, this is a UFO video over Puerto Rico that has stirred international interest. The UFO was sighted around 9:20 p.m. on April 25th in 2013. An independent research group known as Scientific Coalition for Ufology, or SCU, released a 161-page report back on August 11th, 2015, that basically states that the object behaved like nothing known, and it was more than likely a UFO. Well, UFO means unidentified flying object, and this does not mean it was alien or an extraterrestrial-driven craft, just that it was unknown. And the SCU has come to the conclusion that this is what they call unidentified anomalous phenomena, which I like much better than UFO because we can define what a UFO means till we're blue in the face, but when we mention the word UFO, we think X-Files, we think of Greys, we think of skinny aliens piloting these crafts, taking cows and doing experiments on people. Just those kind of things just pop in our head. It's just second nature. It's what we've been conditioned to with the media, with books, with stories, with popular cultural references. That's kind of what we think. So I do like unidentified anomalous phenomena. And how do they come to this conclusion? Well, I guess the bigger thing is how did they obtain this information? A crew aboard a DHC-8 turboprop aircraft from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, a division of Homeland Security, were taking off from Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, Rafael Hernandez Airport in northwest Puerto Rico. The crew noticed an odd object approaching with a pinkish-reddish light approaching from the ocean. As the object came over land, the light suddenly went out. But the aircraft was able to track the object using a thermal imaging system. They contacted the tower at the Rafael Hernandez Airport, which also had a visual on the object, but did not have an identity of the craft. The aircraft circled the unknown object, but never approached it, and stayed in the area for about 10 minutes before continuing on with its mission. Now, obviously, someone aboard the airplane ultimately gave the information to somebody else to disseminate, and that person was Dana Chiviano, a science fiction writer who is also a volunteer for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and Dana took the information to a person named Morgan Beal, who runs the Florida MUFON chapter. The two then formed the group of various scientists to help study the thermal imaging film, as well as details from the tower and other relevant information. Now, this isn't standard protocol within MUFON. Usually, MUFON handles their own investigations internally, and they have a lot of resources already established, especially in Florida, which usually is in the top five, if not the top 10, in UFO sightings on a monthly basis. For some reason, they decided to get a lot of people involved, and I think this was because of it being a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol aircraft. And you're dealing with Homeland Security as well. I'm surprised they were able to obtain this information and make it public, which is may add some questionability to the story, but so far it seems legitimate. So the formation of this group was the result after 2 years of information, researching, studying this video, disseminating all this information, asking people at the tower and other witnesses what they saw. They generated a 161-page report, which has since been examined by a number of other people outside of MUFON. The case was investigated in near secrecy, obviously due to close connection to Homeland Security, which again, I'm surprised that this was able to be released to the general public and didn't undergo any scrutiny. A few interesting finds about the object are that it came from the ocean. It didn't come from over the ocean. It seemed to actually come from the ocean. It circled around the airport landing strip and then headed back out into the ocean. So right there, that information would eliminate a possible balloon, maybe even any other type of remote controlled aircraft or a drone, because at a decent altitude, the wind's going to be pretty heavy. There were numerous radar strikes from the tower that tracked this object. It lasted about 16 minutes until the object completely disappeared. The object was judged to be traveling between 40 and 120 miles per hour, with a median speed of about 80 miles per hour. Even though there's a lot of upper atmosphere wind, that's still awful fast for a balloon to travel. And drones don't actually aren't really able to drive or fly that fast, even in a good stiff wind. The object is thought to have been between 3 and 5 feet in length. An interesting observation occurred toward the end of filming the object when it went into the ocean and traveled around a half a mile when it suddenly came back out of the water, having traveled around 95 miles per hour during that time underwater. Now, several theories from balloons to peregrine falcons to pelicans have been brought up, but all attempts to explain have been written off by SCU. The object's travel pattern and the wind speed of 8 to 13 miles per hour at ground level and 12 to 18 miles per hour from 400 to 3,200 feet suggest it was not a balloon and was again traveling too fast to be a bird of any sort. Now, another interesting find by this team was toward the end of that sighting, the object was over the ocean and it seemed to actually split into two or was joined by another object. I have my own theory about that, and I think that that's just a piece of the thermal imaging artifact that sometimes these things reflect off of objects, which the water would appear to be a mirror-like object to a thermal imaging system, being a pretty static temperature. So that might have been the cause, and I haven't been able to read the entire 161-page report. I've kind of skimmed through the website and gathered and looked at some of the pertinent information, but I'm still suspect about some of these facts that they've concluded. Over 2 years, you'd think that there would be a lot of more stuff available to the general public, but this is still early, and I think you're going to hear a lot more about this story. So what was it? Was it a UFO? Was it something anomalous flying through the sky? Now, one suggestion is an experimental drone. Known as a flimmer, which is the U.S. Navy has developed this flimmer, which is a drone that can travel through water. It's had minimal air testing, but so far no water testing. But through resources that they've gathered to look at this flimmer object, and what I've been able to read is that it's too slow to be this object. Even if they were doing advanced research with this flimmer, why would it be flying over a major airport in Puerto Rico? Kind of weird. And when I first saw this video, my first thought was balloon. I know that sounds crazy. The object at one point seemed to split while over the water. Again, I mentioned this because this happens with thermal imaging from reflections. And a balloon, even, you know, I mentioned water could reflect and make this. A balloon could also make a thermal imaging camera do this. And when you're traveling in a plane, filming an object, it's very difficult to determine the actual speed of an object. And I would love to read how they came to that conclusion about this, the actual speed of this this 3 to 5 foot object. It could be very deceiving. But again, how can you argue with the man hours and the variety of people that looked at this evidence? These were scientists. These were people who were experts in understanding thermal imaging systems, and I've only used a few. I've taken minimal training, so they kind of trump – their findings kind of trump my opinions here. So again, this is a very interesting story, and I'm really looking forward to this developing. And if you want to – again, I've posted this link, this story, at my Facebook page on Paranews Insider at facebook.com/Paranews Insider. And if you want to get a close-up look at the data, I think the link is within that story, and I'll give it to you here now. ExploreSCU.org. That's ExploreSCU.org, which is the homepage for that investigation team. And again, I'll venture to say that this is not the last that you're going to hear about this video and this investigation. And again, I'm surprised that this story has not generated a lot more attention than what it has so far. It's a major story because of where it came from, the people who were involved with it. Homeland Security filmed on a secure airplane, so it's obviously not really tampered with, obviously not CGI, hopefully. But again, we'll find out as time goes by that we'll see how the story unfolds. And I'm going to keep a close eye on this, and hopefully it doesn't turn out to be something silly and explainable. And I want to mention now that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, on the CJ Mars Radio Network. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And back to cryptid news. A story that I had for last week, but I didn't mention it, kind of skimmed over it. Several reports of strange lights in the sky were reported in El Paso, Texas, back on August 22nd. And this was not really a huge viral story, just kind of a story that picked up some steam, but I found it interesting because I've read about El Paso probably about three times this year on UFO sightings. Now, a couple of them were obvious hoaxes. And they were obviously not very legitimate at all. Pretty horrible attempts or film of aircraft, things flying. So kind of ignored those as anything legitimate. But this story turned out to be explainable. The lights turned out to be a military exercise that included flares, illuminated rounds, and helicopters. Well, many in the UFO field were screaming cover up because of obviously being a military exercise explaining that story. But there are witnesses that confirm that this was going on at the same time. So that story kind of got booted out as a legitimate story. But like I mentioned, El Paso's had some strange connections to UFO stories recently. And one of them that is really legitimate, in my opinion, or that's strange at least, happened June 29th was actually when the photographs were taken. It wasn't a video, it was photographs. And back on June 29th, this was a strange cube that was seen along with a strange black cloud that appeared to be some sort of what was described as a vortex where this object was coming out from. The witness took seven photographs overall in an attempt to capture this black cube as it moved from cloud to cloud. One of those photographs, of those photographs, only two of them actually showed this object. That's not right. Three of them showed the object. One showed the man pointing toward the object. Another showed this coming out of this vortex. And the third one, which is the most unbelievable photograph I've seen of a UFO in a long time, shows this object completely out in the open, granted with a cloud background. And it's not blurry. It's not far away. It's not close up either. It's at a distance that you would expect somebody to photograph something of high strangeness from the ground. It's kind of to be expected. It's just floating there in the sky. It almost looks like, if I had to explain it, looks like a bale of hay high up in the sky. And again, it's perhaps one of the most intriguing UFO pictures taken this year or in the past few years. It's a very interesting thing. I don't think I have that one on the Facebook page, but I guess I can put that on the Facebook page. Why not? Very interesting photograph, very, very interesting story. Have not heard anything more about it. No other sightings, no other information about this particular person who saw this. I think they did do an interview where they talked about the sighting, and they did sound legitimate about their particular sighting. Which if they sounded sketchy, that might throw a little bit of a question behind it. But the only thing that frustrates me is there's only that one witness. Only one person photographed it. Only one person saw it. And they were outside. They weren't behind glass. So it was not a reflection. Definitely not a military aircraft or anything like that. So very interesting sighting. And that concludes the UFO portion of the Paranormal News Insider. Now, ghost news is next, and I typically don't have ghost stories. Go figure. Don't always have ghost news, and this week was actually a pretty weak week. That's kind of weird. Pretty weak week for paranormal news stories. There wasn't a whole lot of great stories out there, and that happens. Sometimes you go through weeks where there's not a whole lot going on, then all of a sudden you get inundated with a lot of really good stories. Probably that last story that I just talked about the UFO in Puerto Rico. I think that's pretty much the biggest story going around in the paranormal right now. That's an ongoing thing. But in ghost news, I'm going to comment on a YouTube video that you may have seen, you may not have seen. If you haven't seen it, again, this is something that I knew I was going to talk about tonight, so I threw it up on the Facebook page, paranewsinsider.com, or facebook.com/paranewsinsider. And this was a YouTube video by somebody who used to investigate ghosts. And I might as well talk about this before, kind of to preface it, but she's become a skeptic. And there's a lot of people who have become skeptical over time. And it's a natural progression for people who are in the field for a long time to naturally become a little bit more skeptical about what they're doing. If you don't, then you probably need to reexamine what you're doing. But some people, I just think, take it a little too far, and people will form hate groups or follow people and slam every work that they're doing or every video. And, you know, if you don't like what you're doing, go away. If you don't like what we're doing, go away. But she's one of those rare people that kind of tries to maintain a balance between believing and being a skeptic. I think she wants to help. And there's other people out there that are very much like that as well. A gentleman that I respect highly, Benjamin Radford, who is involved with probably the largest skeptical organization out there, is very similar to this as well. He's obviously tied to Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, CSI, formerly known as PSYCOP. But he's also been out there giving information to people and letting us know how we're doing things wrong in an attempt to get us to be able to do our work correctly. And if we can provide solid information to him, he's willing to listen. So anyway, back to this YouTube video by this girl named Haley Stevens. She's known as the Ghost Geek, and she's out of the United Kingdom. This video did make the rounds in a few paranormal news outlets last week, and this video was titled, quote, "Ghost Hunting Mistakes Everyone Makes," unquote. And right there, I kind of got defensive because I do things a little bit differently. Those of you who have listened to the first show and have listened to my interviews on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, which again is coming up tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern, which would be an hour after my show is over, so you can get a snack. Again, sharpen your pencils and grab your notebooks. I've talked about the E4 method, which is kind of a departure from the way things are being done. So I was a little offended when she said that everyone makes these mistakes. But she did outline 5 good points where investigation methods are flawed. While I was quick to agree with the majority of the points she made, there were still a couple she made that I thought were more of a matter of belief rather than being true fact. The other thing I thought about was just how the movement of ghost investigators becoming skeptics has continued to maintain momentum. And again, why are people like this bothering to be involved in the paranormal at all if they're truly skeptical of ghosts? But talk about these top 5 things, and I'll give my opinion on these things. And I guess for myself, yes, I've become more skeptical over time, from my beginnings back in 1996 through dissolving my group in 2011, because I felt like we weren't doing things correctly. I felt that we were not doing things the way we should be doing after 15 years in the field. But my skepticism has turned into trying to teach and train others not to make the mistakes I made, and as well as to help people identify things that we are doing wrong, such as these five things that I'm going to talk about here, but also how to do things right instead of people who complain and say, well, you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong. Well, how should we do it? And that's something that I've tried to work on to try to help the paranormal field. But here is her top five things that she says that everyone is doing wrong. The first thing here, paranormal research is like a spiritualist church. Spirit communication methods such as Ouija boards, pendulums, dowsing rods, table tipping, or table turning, or other methods in which there is contact with an object. Well, Haley mentions what's called the ideomotor effect, but it's also known as unconscious muscular action, or UMA, that scientists have known that helps move items to satisfy our preconceived notions about the outcome that is created by our own desires. Stevens also mentions the use of psychics and mediums as unethical, since they are more than likely guessing and have usually never been tested. Well, Haley assumes that all psychics and mediums use cold reading during investigations or just have overreactive imaginations. She also mentions that most people are just reading body language and are interpreting this subconsciously as information from ghosts. Well, I have to stop right there, and I have personally studied body language for many years, and I can tell you that even the best body language expert is going to be at 50% at a guess rate on anything. So this comment is belief-based, not fact-based. As if these people were that good at reading body language, they'd probably have their own TV show. The comment about cold reading and big imaginations are mostly true, but I have worked with a small minority of people that defy explanation, and to assume that no living person can communicate with the consciousness or memory of a once living person pretty much means that ghosts don't exist at all. So if we're going to have that kind of thought, again, why are we in this? Why are we doing this? If we don't feel that this communication is possible, that's the whole reason behind ghost experiences. A ghost just doesn't wander around in an empty house. It takes a living person and an environment to create a ghost. Well, that's what parapsychologists think, and that's kind of what I believe as well. So the second thing here, just because you can't explain something doesn't mean it doesn't have an explanation. Haley basically states that just because we can't figure out something that happened to us does not mean there's not a logical explanation out there. We just might not be able to see it at the time or ever. Well, this one just boils down to a lack of problem solving. It's been my stance that we as paranormal investigators need to be nothing more than problem solvers. Clients contact us with problems they can't understand or solve on their own. Their thinking is that something paranormal or supernatural is occurring, which is why they contacted us instead of an electrician, a plumber, exterminator, home inspector, or even seek professional counseling for that matter. Our job should be to first look for rational explanations and never assume that the paranormal is happening, no matter what we believe. So I kind of agree with her to an extent on that one. The third part is doing it in the dark. That's one of my favorite themes. I never understood this. Her point is that in order to properly conduct an investigation of something, you should replicate the conditions as best as you can. Well, my take mirrors her belief in that immediately altering the conditions to darkness does not serve any other purpose other than conformity to what others are doing. While this does have its roots in the age of spiritualism, it really throws any science out the window when you lose your sight on purpose and rely on emotions or feelings to gather evidence in the worst conditions possible. Now, point four is not understanding your equipment. Haley's point here is that many people don't know how to use their paranormal equipment, don't know what it's used for, or use it incorrectly or for the wrong reasons. EMF detectors have never been proven to detect ghost energy. Haley incorrectly states, quote, using a K2 meter to try and find electromagnetic fields that are causing clients to have strange sensations isn't going to happen because those fields cannot be detected with a K2 meter, unquote. Actually, a K2 meter is designed to detect electromagnetic fields, and that's all it does, besides have cool blinky lights. She might be referring to electromagnetic sensitivity, which is a controversial topic that most skeptics will say is not real, despite other scientists and people who have demonstrated the opposite. She doesn't really come out and say that, but I'm assuming this. And if she's just saying that K2s don't detect electromagnetic fields, then she's completely wrong. For me, my experience, I've worked with an investigator who studied at the Koestler Parapsychology Unit in Edinburgh, Scotland, who conducted experiments with this exact topic. He discovered that people with preconceived notions can display the symptoms, whether caused by electromagnetic waves or ghosts. The outcome is real to the person. And I've also had many experiences with this, from something as simple as moving a fish tank away from a bed to getting some electrician involved that actually make things stop. Now, whether this was from the electromagnetic waves or belief alone is something that will never be known. Haley does make other good points about investigators not calibrating equipment or holding other pieces of tech that should be stationary. Well, in reality, there's pretty much only one, and that's the Trifield Natural Meter, which has the blue face on it compared to the yellow of the regular Trifield Meter. These should be placed on a surface and not touched. These meters read natural EMF that comes naturally from DC fields and is reading the Earth even while indoors. The Trifield Natural can also detect a living person's magnetic structure, or I should say signature, but not a ghost's. The bottom line is that her logic is sound, that using equipment not for its intended use can lead to irrational conclusions based on belief or assumptions, and naturally on readings, including using thermal imaging and non-contact thermometers. And finally, her number five thing here that we all screw up in the field is looking for ghosts. Haley states that, quote, "You shouldn't enter a location with the intention of finding ghosts," unquote. Well, it may seem silly to state that, but the logic is sound. She states that this is a biased approach, since you are already having the conclusion in mind that you will find a ghost. She also states that investigators will tend to cherry-pick information that supports their preconceived notions rather than rationally eliminating things as they go along to support their initial approach. She states that if you ask if there's anyone there, anything that happens will be instantly attributed to a response or confirmation of the question. Haley states that the best approach is to look for the rational first before looking for ghosts. Well, I couldn't agree more. It's been my view that the mere fact of investing in equipment, matching shirts and everything that the paranormal supports, this everything supports that approach used in the field. Since there is a financial and time investment, there will also be an investment in finding things that support the views and beliefs of the groups and the individuals within it. Well, that's your news for this week. And now I have other news, including a big announcement. We'll also talk conferences and conventions in the last few minutes of the show. So what's this big announcement? Well, I'll start with an experience I had back in May of 2013. I got to join the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society in their spring expedition at Keystone State Park. Now, this is a location that's very close to a very active area for Bigfoot sightings, also for UFO sightings as well. And, you know, ghosts are everywhere anyway. But I had a great experience with this. We got to go out Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and Saturday night on expeditions. And Saturday night, we formed multiple groups, and we went out in the woods, and we were stationed about a quarter to a half mile apart. And in various groups, we were tied together through walkie-talkies, so we knew exactly where each other was at. And we did the basic things that Bigfooters do that you see on TV, call blasting and yells and different sounds, tree knocking, things like that. And we got some interesting responses that could not be explained. It's very exciting. I even found a partial print that discounted as being an actual Bigfoot track, but it could have been a long time ago. Who knows? But it did look like a foot. But anyway, what's that got to do with my big announcement? Well, next year, May 6th, 7th, and 8th of 2016, I will be joining with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's going to be a very similar event to the one I just described, a three-day, two-night adventure that's going to be camping in a very active area in southwestern Pennsylvania, an area that's been featured on season 8 of Finding Bigfoot's Paranormal Squatchtivity episode. And there's going to be a lot of enthusiasts and fans there. Eric Altman, who was at the first event, will also be at this event. And I will be having lectures and I will be speaking during that event, as well as world-renowned Pennsylvania UFO and Bigfoot researcher and author Stan Gordon, who I got to meet earlier this year at the Butler Paranormal Conference, will also be speaking there. And there's going to be more speakers added. Additional people will be added to this. This has just really just been announced. It's just something that's still being put together. We don't even have a website. There's not even prices yet, as the campgrounds have not yet announced their 2016 rates. But if you're interested in this, you can contact Eric Altman at BigfootBoy_2000@yahoo.com, or the event is posted on Facebook. Now, that's again something that I need to put on the ParanewsInsider.com, or I should say the Paranews Insider Facebook site, so you can, if you're interested, you can join up to that and follow the information. But I'll definitely be talking about that as time goes on. And other conferences and conventions, there's one that I want to mention that, again, is another one that just popped in just recently. I was asked to put this on the webpage, and I said, you know what, I'll talk about it. And one thing you can do, if you ever email somebody and you ask them to do something for you, hey, can you mention my event? And I get back to you and I say, sure, I'll do it. She responded to me again and thanked me. That doesn't sound like much, but you know what? That goes a long way, because I'm going to spend some time talking about her event. And that event is the Adventure at Pensacola Little Theater, obviously in Pensacola, Florida, is happening this weekend, September 19th through the 20th in Pensacola, Florida. It does sound like a neat adventure. If I was in the area, I would probably go. There are three different price ranges you can go and register for this thing if you're interested. There's a dinner provided by a place called Portobello Market. Presentations will also be given. And at 9 p.m., a ghost walking tour of downtown Pensacola will be given. That's one particular tour. A second tour is walking ghost tour of downtown Pensacola. And after that, at 11 o'clock, you get the ghost hunt at the Pensacola Cultural Center. Sounds like fun. And a full price includes pretty much all of that. An all-night ghost adventure – or a ghost – I shouldn't say ghost adventure. An all-night ghost hunt adventure that lasts until 3 o'clock in the morning. And all that for $95. Now, there's two other price ranges, $35, $69 for the second one, which does not include dinner. And the full price ticket is $95. Now, that may sound like a lot of money to you, but again, you're getting food and a midnight snack. You're going to get a walking tour that's right there. That's $35 anyway. You're going to get presentations, training, an equipment briefing by Two Feathers Paranormal, and a fully guided all-night ghost hunt adventure at Pensacola Little Theater. Now, I can tell you from experience that being granted all-night access usually doesn't mean all night. It's not going to be till 6 o'clock in the morning. It's usually till 3 or 4, so this is about right. And some of these places will charge you $400, $500, $600, even $1,000 to go into, even if you're going with a group of people. So this is a good deal. And if you're interested in more information, go to the ParanewsInsider.com website and click on the events tab at the top. I typically have not covered ghost classes, tours, and guided hunts in a while, but that's a category that I am bringing back, and I'm going to be covering those things. I'm going to be talking about that because I think with this show having its one-hour format, it's going to get a lot of attention, and it's going to get a lot of promoters and people involved, and hopefully I'll be bringing some of these people that are involved in these events on and letting them talk about their events instead of me chopping them up. Also, later this month in ghost conferences and conventions, we have ParAmericon 2015, September 26th in Manassas Park, Virginia, HillCon, Paranormal Community Convention in Haunted Hillview Manor in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. I've been invited to that place. I still haven't been there. Looks interesting. Also, we have the Rose City Paracon, September 26th in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. The Paradigm Symposium 2015, October 1st through the 4th in Bloomington, Minnesota, and the East Coast Paracon October 10th in Pittstown Township, Pennsylvania, ShadowCon 2015, October 16th and 17th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Little Traverse Bay Parafest 2015, October 16th and 17th as well, but in Baytown, Michigan. There's also a couple of other Paracons here, but I'm not going to ramble on as time is coming to an end. But there is one that I want to mention that's happening on October 26th, 2015. And that's just a little library talk, but that's with yours truly. Yes, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, the insider of the Paranormal News Insider, will be at the Westerville Public Library. Now, that's in Northeast Columbus, Ohio. So if you're in the area, you don't want to miss this. This is actually my seventh consecutive year. I mean, how many teams are around for 7 years, let alone how many people get to speak at a library for seven straight years? It's an awesome library. I usually do pack the house, not to brag. It's a great time. Everybody really enjoys it. I've changed up the presentation every year. This year, I haven't even started working on it yet, but I'll be talking E4 method. I'll be talking cryptozoology. I'll be talking investigation methods. No holds barred at that. So if you're in the Columbus, Ohio area near Halloween, October 26th, I'll be there. And years past, I've talked so long that the security guard actually comes in and listens to the last few minutes and kind of runs his finger under his chin. I'm still not sure what that means, but almost gotten locked in there a few times. It's a fun time. Everyone seems to like it. They really get involved in it, and sometimes we wear costumes. I don't, but sometimes people wear costumes. It's a lot of fun. So if you're in the area, please join it. UFO stuff. There are some there's a big UFO convention coming up. The 2015 MUFON Symposium, September 24th through the 27th in Irvine, California, and the Philadelphia area MUFON Conference, October 9th and 10th. In Longhorn, Pennsylvania. Also, more UFO conferences, but I'm not going to talk about all of them. The Burr Oak Bigfoot Conference in cryptozoology takes place. This one's already over. That was the 11th and 12th. Sorry, guys. The 2015 Mothman Festival, another great time. I've been there before. September 19th and 20th in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Don't miss that one. And the second annual Albatwitch, I always chop that up, Albatwitch Festival, September 26th in Columbia, Pennsylvania. Got invited to that one, but I won't be able to make it this year. So to see the entire list of conferences and conventions, check out paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. And as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. Or you can go to the website and click on the About and Contact tab at the top and let me know if you have any information about an event, and I'll get it on there. Unless it's a Comic-Con or ScareCon, horror gaming, anime-based type thing, I don't usually cover those. But I did make two exceptions this year. The Pensacola Comic Convention, which was formerly known as the Pensacola Paracon. They changed names because they changed things. And the Scarefest, which I didn't want to include in the list, but there was quite a few people there that I did know. I didn't realize were going to be there. And an author who sent me information and questioned whether or not or why not I didn't put that on there. But I did put it on there. But so it's kind of a judgment call on whether or not I'm going to add these things to it. But we're not associated in any way, obviously, with any of these events. So I can put it on there if I want. And if I don't want to, I won't. But it's obviously one of the most, I would say, concise and full lists you're going to find out there on paranormal conferences and conventions. So check it out. And these things are good. A lot of people complain about them. They say, well, you know, what good is one of these things? Well, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to network with people. You're going to learn a lot of good information from other people. And, you know, whether they're good or bad, trust me, you're going to have a good time. You're going to learn some things. You're going to meet a lot of great people. And I try to go to them as much as I can, but I'm spoiled because I get to speak at these things. So I usually want to speak or at least have a table at these events when I go. So that's pretty much it for the Paranormal News Insider this week. Next week, I'm working on some stories already. A UFO sighting over Los Angeles. Kind of interesting. We'll find out if it's how interesting it really is as I dive into it and do some more research. But we'll see what happens. Hopefully next week I'll be a little bit more exciting as far as news, and there'll be a little bit more stuff to talk about. And this week has been fun. It's kind of trying to get into the rhythm of getting these stories. And, you know, an hour seems to go by pretty darn fast. And, you know, an hour comes and goes. You know, whether it's 1 hour or 2 hours, time seems to slip by when you're having fun, when you're talking about things that you truly, truly enjoy. So with that being said, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And don't stop believing. That's the song. Don't stop believing.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.